All right, continuing our exploration of eschatological optimism, Vidarya Dugina, and in this the theme that we're exploring here is women in tradition, gender roles, and this is entitled The War of the Sexes, Gender in Tradition, the Creation of the Universe. We're going to start reading here. So let me know what you guys think, what you think of the ideas, and it shouldn't be too long, maybe 5 pages. So let me know what you guys think about this book in general. If you watch some of the other videos, this will be my second or third video in this series, and I'm kind of going by themes in the book. The book is a collection of essays and discussions and lectures that's exploring this concept of eschatological optimism, and we're looking at this idea of feminism in orthodoxy, of Christian feminism, and the differences between kind of a Russian feminism and the feminism of the West. I find it very relevant to maybe explore these ideas, whether we believe them or resonate with them or not. So here it's entitled The War of the Sexes, Gender and Tradition, the Creation of the Universe. Dugina starts, "Today I would like to talk about a complex array of problems pertaining to feminism and the feminine principle. Specifically, I would like to talk about what Basho Finn called the, quote, bloody war of the sexes. I will also try to examine a kind of logical sequence of leading from the traditionalist view of the confrontation between the masculine and the feminine, from the very same bloody war of the sexes, through an unstable balance, a kind of tango where the partners change places in a harsh but beautiful dance, to the inverted androgen of the cyborg manifesto. When it comes to tradition, traditionalism, what is important for understanding the feminine principle here is context. What Basho Finn calls the bloody war of the sexes is an ontological confrontation. It is not a confrontation over the course of which one must claim victory, but confrontation as a process. It is war for the sake of war. It is not a war that is to be won by one side, but the war that essentially constitutes the world. Whenever tradition speaks of the characteristics of the feminine and masculine, cosmological or ontological terms, notions, theories, and plots are at play. In Hinduism, for example, there is the confrontation between Purusha and Prakriti, or the active and the passive principles. This inevitably gives shape to and creates the world precisely by virtue of the interplay of mutual attraction and repulsion. Interpreting such a cosmogonic and ontological confrontation as a will for the linear dominance of one principle over the other seems to be deeply erroneous. There is no end goal here of establishing the diktat of one principle, for instance, the masculine over the feminine. The whole dynamic of this confrontation is the leitmotif that constitutes the world. If one of these principles decisively wins this war, then the world will lose its balance, collapse in one direction, and its complex, organic structure will turn into a flat, alienated system that can only lead to the world's end and destruction. Modernity, the advent of feminism. As for the subsequent models of interpreting sex and gender that arose in modern societies, i.e., after tradition was marginalized and discarded, the most striking formulations were put forth by feminism in its first, second, and third waves. Here, the point was for women to win the war of the sexes. At some point, women recognized that patriarchy as the fixed victory of men over women, and they resolved to rebel. Women now wanted to win this war, but in completely different ways. Most often, feminists choose the strategy of fighting for full equality with men, which means that they strive to take on the male function by entering the male sphere, the masculine paradigm. Women achieve the right to equality, to participate in social life and politics and state affairs, and demanded access to vote, the suffragist movement, all because they wanted to be like men, to become men. It is curious that women gained the right to vote in elections in Turkey in 1930, while in France this only occurred in 1944. Which of these countries would seem to have more progressive in the Western sense of the word? The war waged by feminists, suffragettes, and later the war waged by the feminism of the 1960s for the right to choose, i.e., freedom and legalization of abortions, all of this was a reinterpretation, a turn of the war of the sexes, not as a cosmogonic, eternally lasting process, as is in the case in tradition, but as a kind of historical task in which there must always be a clear winner. The women who have embarked on the path of of feminist activism, provoking the oceanic tidal waves of a worldwide women's struggle against men, have more often than not themselves consciously become men, or more accurately, their surrogates, pushing themselves into the masculine paradigm. In so doing, they have displaced the traditional balance model of interaction between these two principles, these two paradigms, which are, on the one hand, different from and contrast one another, while on the other hand, being closely intertwined, constituting the world in their symbiotic dance. By going over the masculine side, feminist women create a gap without realizing it. In doing so, they betray the feminine, abandon the classical traditionalist vocation of the mother or devoted daughter, and lose touch with the most important classical archetype of tradition, the role of the wife, the bride, the lover. Women thereby move into a new, completely unbalanced world, which arises due to a shift in the structure of the metaphysics of sex. It would seem that things are generally clear at this point, that this is what we are now seeing everywhere. Up to this point, we have predominantly been witnesses of this brand of feminism. Of course, there are other variations like socialist feminism, which insists on equality in labor and fighting against bourgeois exploitation, or anti-racist feminism, which identifies the fate of minority groups and underdeveloped societies in global politics with the position of women under patriarchy. But the principle remains the same everywhere. The demand for complete equality with men, for abolishing the ontological and corresponding social differences between the sexes. Without a doubt, all of this leads to women themselves adopting masculine archetypes and functions. Feminists start by calling for protection of women from men, but they go on to destroy women themselves by turning them into men. Donna Haraway changes the agenda. Something astounding happened in feminism in 1985. In the journal Social Review, the famous feminist Donna Haraway published the essay entitled, quote, The Cyborg Manifesto. It should be said that in 1985, this model was absolutely avant-garde, and even today, this work is an absolute breakthrough, comparably only to the writings of Reza Negresante or Deleuze's work in the 1960s. The point is that if first and second wave feminism tried to shift the Overton window in society's understanding of women by bringing women closer to the masculine archetype, then Donna Haraway, in essence, shattered this window. She took the sheet of paper on which the whole paradigm of feminism thought had been sketched out, the whole history of the confrontation between the masculine and the feminine principles from tradition through the stages of the bloody war of the sexes, all the way down to the appearance of the first feminists who proclaimed that women should win this war once and for all and wrest equality from men, and suddenly turned it over, drawing her own paradigm on the other side. In this new paradigm, Haraway argues the very notion of woman, as such, is an artificial construct. The feminine experience, feminine identity, female sex, Haraway says, is simply a fantasy, a projection. There is no woman. Woman is simply a social-cultural role assigned to those who are weaker. Even if feminists defeat men, this role will not disappear, as women will simply become men, and men will become women. The asymmetry will remain because sex and gender are an asymmetry where the one who is weaker, smaller, and lower down in the hierarchy is the woman, the quote-unquote woman. Proceeding from this, Haraway concludes that we must now move on from the first and second phases of women's war for equality, the war of the feminine, to the stage of the cyborg. True equality cannot be achieved as long as sex, which always implies asymmetry, exists. This means that sex must be abolished and completely abandoned. Only then, when men and women are no more, will women be free. But this is not possible in humankind. This means that humankind must be abolished and replaced by sexless cyborgs. The cyborg, the inverted androgen. The cyborg is a hybrid that is beyond sex. Through this figure, Haraway's work contains the most important and most existential essence of that constitutes postmodern or third-wave feminism. We arrived at the radical figure of the inverted androgen. Such a move, so innovative for feminism, perfectly fits into the context of dark enlightenment. Here, the principle of post-gender comes to the fore, wherein sex, gender, as such, is recognized to be a deliberately denigrating system that inevitably creates inequality, hierarchy, and, in the feminist optic, domination, repression, suppression, exploitation, and harassment. In Haraway's work, sex and gender are recognized to be synonymous for totalitarianism. The conclusion, sex, gender, and the hierarchy, rigidity, and oppression inherent in them must be disposed of. For Donna Haraway, the figure of the cyborg is the opportunity to transition to a new world, to a society of victorious post-humanism. Haraway describes the cyborg as follows. The cyborg is a creature that does not want to unite with another, does not want to love, does not want to give birth. It doesn't need anyone else at all. The cyborg is the absolute individual that needs no one but itself. The cyborg lives by regeneration. If it loses an arm, it grows another one. The cyborg lives neither in the sphere of nature nor in the realm of technology, but belongs to an intermediate zone. It is ironic, not logical. It is fluid, not fixed. It is perverted, not straight. Further alongside the philosophers of modernity, Donna Haraway recognizes that, quote, God is dead, but adds that, quote, the goddess is dead too. It is not enough to overthrow the patriarchal figure of the father, son, and brother, the triad of the Christian religion and the Greek classics. It is necessary to destroy the mother, the spouse, the sister. Both come at the cost of each other. Emancipation must be full and complete. This means that the human itself must die. Therefore, the transition to the cyborg is the only solution. This is the most logical and consistent conclusion of feminism. In this version of cyberfeminism, the feminine becomes something completely new that exists beyond sex and ceases to be feminine, instead coming to represent the inverted androgen. Man is not suitable for this because he is too human. Only the female feminist is capable of overcoming the human as such. Haraway later developed this idea into a theory of the Kutulchin. I don't even know how to say that. Spelled C-H-T-H-U-L-U-C-E-N-E. A new phase in the evolution of the Earth in which humankind will die out after a nuclear bombardment, leaving only surviving women who undergo mutation and turn into creatures consisting of cobwebs, algae, torn plastic bags, and other garbage thrown into the world ocean. That's something. Last section here, gender and catecon. Let us reiterate the main phases of this development of the metaphysics of sex. At first, we see how a war of the sexes is postulated in tradition and in the traditionalism. The feminine and the masculine are in ceaseless, processual confrontation, which constitutes and creates the living, orderly world that is always balancing on the edge of chaos. Then this struggle, this war, is cut short, because it is no longer conceived as a process, but is instead recognized to mean the necessary victory of one over the other. The delicate balance of the dialectic of sex that prevailed in traditional society is frozen. Henceforth, the war must be won by one side. Man becomes a rapist and exploiter. This is how female feminists portray patriarchy. Then within this paradigm, there are calls for violence by women against men. This last stage of feminism comes when the war of the sexes is completely eliminated. Henceforth, it is simply crossed out. There's no more war, no more play, no more dialectic, no more relationships, no more love, no more marriage, no more birth, only self-regeneration. There's no subordination of one to the other. Instead, there is hybridization. Donna Haraway's ideal is a world without sex and gender. In many senses, we are already heading in this direction. It seems to me that Donna Haraway's model remains amenable even if too avant-garde. Sure, we can notice the appearance of the first mutants on screens, performers like Sevdiliza in the ironic clip Human, or Ahoni from the band Anthony and the Johansons. We see examples of strange androgyny, transgender people, and half-human, half-animal entities. These are the prototypes of the Chutulcene, again, C-H-T-H-U-L-U-C-E-N-E. Nevertheless, it is noteworthy that the masculine and feminine, the human and the animal, the human and the metallic, are still fighting within them. The two principles still coexist within them, and there is always some kind of painful, tragic imbalance. They are still in this great world of war of the sexes. Although they strive to get out of this war, they come out of it merely deformed and incomplete. But a completely balanced, self-sufficient cyborg has yet to arrive. It is, its time hasn't come, but it could, and I think it will arrive rather soon. When the feminine and the masculine are finally abolished and replaced by cyborgs, it will signal the end of the world. What conclusion can we reach from such a brief overview? In the sphere of sex, we are called to fulfill the mission of the catechon, to save humankind from the approaching death, which means having sex in its ontological, metaphysical depth. If the war of the sexes ends, it will mean the end of the forces that can create and maintain the world. Together with the loss of man and woman, we will lose being itself. All right, that's the end of this section. Let me know what you think. Until next time.